For April the 13th, 2018, we talk about the Myst 25th Anniversary Collection Kickstarter launch, Framed 2, and Freeways. Small programming note, there will be no episode next week because of travel. Welcome to Level 236. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Dennis, you have returned.
I have.
Yeah.
I had to fight through swarms and waves of snowflakes to get back. And that's not in the alt-right sense.
No. Much very fragile egos.
Wow.
By which I mean the alt-right. No. Yeah.
But yeah, had a little travel, nothing too exciting, but I'm back in town.
Yay.
Nice.
Welcome back, Dennis.
Yes. Thank you.
So I assume you're
must carry the show.
Yeah. Yes, we're all very tired.
Let's go.
Yeah. No, I'm just I'm getting ready for Milwaukee. Jala, you just had a big event.
Yeah, I did. I don't know if people want to hear about that, but I did a thing.
Yeah, it was a rucking event, and this has inspired me to do something. I'm a long way from rucking myself. However, I want to start a rucking event here in Cincinnati. Call it the Allen Ruck. And everybody has to do the event dressed up like Cameron, the best friend from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. By which I mean wear long shorts and a Gordie Howe hockey jersey.
Do the droplet sound with their cheeks.
Yeah, just do that. That character Cameron played by Allen Ruck.
Mm-hmm. Well, to clarify, it was actually a trail race, and I was the only crazy person out there with a ruck on.
Okay.
There was one dude, the tire dude. The tire dude always is dragging a tire, and he's always running ultras. Every single time I go to a trail race that has an ultra option, he's always doing the longest one.
Okay.
And he's just got like a tire strapped to like a chain that has a strap around his waist, and he's got like his water bottle attached to the tire, and he just drags the tire the whole way.
Oh, so like carrying it like on his shoulder, that'd be one thing. Actually, like ball and chaining it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This guy
was inspired by the story of Sisyphus, I guess.
That's a thing that is a typical way of training for ultra marathon people, because the added resistance and stuff is better training to get in during your miles if you want to make it extra hard for all that crazy terrain that you oftentimes have to deal with. Uh-huh. This was a very flat course, but anyway, I went 50K, which is 31 miles, with approximately 30 pounds, which is just shy of a quarter of my body weight. I am a very small person, so like I was carrying quite a bit of weight for my size. That is why it is considered to be a heavy ruck for me.
Mm-hmm.
I ran the first 18 miles with this thing at a pace that is pretty fast for having a heavy ruck on my back.
Just the first 18.
Well, I ran just the first 18, which is over halfway. And then there was a cold front that blew through. So like it started off hot and humid. I'm used to that. So I'm like, okay, I'm good, you know? And then about halfway through, it started getting really windy, and it had been raining all morning. So I'm like running out there in the rain with a ruck on and in the mud, by the way. And then when I got to the lakes, when I was passing through the lakes, the wind was so crazy. I'm like, you know what? I am not going to fight this wind, because we were running into the headwind, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm like, people who have been listening know that I had plantar fasciitis. I got over that, but I still have my Achilles tendon. The tendons take a lot longer to heal than anything else. And so the Achilles tendon started getting tight, didn't get pained, but was tight. So I'm like, I'm just going to march the rest of this. And I marched it, and, you know, like I didn't have any pains, but, you know, rolling and checking stuff out today, like doing foam roll and recovery exercises and stuff. My decision was great, because You know, like I could feel, oh, this part's really crunchy or this part's, you know, tight. And it's, you know, like this would be a problem if I were running chronically and, yeah, and hadn't stopped. So, you know, I prevented injury, and but I am actually getting better because I have not been running at all. And the fact that I could run 18 miles out of nowhere and be cool, you know, and then march the rest of the 31, you know, like I'm getting better.
Nice.
So,
well done.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my first ultra, baby's first ultra. Woo. My yeah, official ultra. I mean, like they tricked me into that ultra in December.
As opposed to your accidental ultra. Yeah.
Yeah. My accidental ultra. Damn it. So
I hear that's the new mechanic in Street Fighter VI.
Oh no. Oops. Yeah.
I think you mean, oh no.
Oh, you been up to anything, Ben?
I got to go visit one of my friends in Portland over the weekend. Ooh. And we saw a couple movies, hung out, had food. It was great. This is my college friend, Brian Perk, for anybody who knows that
Oh,
person.
Dang, Brian, yeah.
Yeah. So that was cool.
Neat.
Mm-hmm. That was like invisible hand daps. You were totally dapping this dude's hand, and like he's not even there, but that's okay.
Yeah, I know Perk.
Yeah, you know that dude.
You guys went through the same program.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
He was not an all-star senior like you were, though.
Come on. That is ridiculous. No, I all of a sudden want to start asking questions about how Perk is doing, but this is not the venue. So
we'll keep it off air.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we've got plenty of show to do. I think that we have achieved a good amount of banter here. Why don't we do the thing, by which I mean the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're going to get started with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. This won't come through on the recording for everybody, but my The Brief was so loud that it echoed back into the microphone for one of you guys. So maybe I should hit that a little less hard. Do you mind if I go first?
Go.
Yeah, I'm real excited about this. So a couple weeks ago, I brought a story about Cyan Worlds, the developer of Myst, starting their new game, the title, which I forget. I have another one here about them. I've just got Myst on the brain. And I was thinking about going back through and doing like another playthrough just because it's been a while since I played these. Like maybe like I did all of them back in 2011 when we did it for WoF. So, you know, mm-hmm, think about that. But no, Cyan actually started, they launched a Kickstarter for the Myst 25th Anniversary Collection.
Huh.
Yeah. A goal of just a little under $250,000 to re-release all seven Myst games. So think, you know, Myst 1 through 5, Myst Uru, and then also Real Myst. Y'all let me know when the word mist loses all meaning for you.
I was just like, I was lost for a minute there going, there were that many mist games. Yeah. Which ones did I miss? When did these come out? Like, I got lost in all of that. Continue.
I will continue. Yeah. So a large part of this, of the cost is actually basically re-securing some of the rights to publish these. So starting with Myst 3 Exile, I believe, and then going to Myst 4. Okay, so that was a weird way to say that. I said that as a range. Myst 3 and 4 were Ubisoft titles. And I believe Uru was also published by Ubisoft. So they have to get the rights back, but they are putting them out as a digital collection. And also, they've got some really good physical rewards. This is basically a commercial for this, because I want there's no danger that this that people aren't going to, there's no danger that this will not hit its goal. But
yeah, it already has 233,000 of the 247.
Yes, with 44 days left to go, so that it's got that. However, oh man, it's already they've already sold it out. The $1,000 tier, which I never in a million years, well, I mean, I could put together $1,000. That would be very irresponsible to do that. I don't know. You get a.
I'd have to hide a body.
it would definitely. Challenge me in the future if I did that. However, you would get like I think like 25 pieces of hand-drawn art, like concept art for the that went into the making of Riven. More responsibly, at the $250 tier, you get a replica of Gen's pen and his inkwell that looks like a gigantic brass bug. That one's a little bit too much of a spicy meatball. Down at 100, though, you get DVD versions of all 7 games, which you has a disc drive anymore, but they come in a box that is made up to look like the Myst linking book, and it has a little panel where you can slide different pieces of art in. So as a little nice. As a little objet de game, that would be really cool to have. For $70 more, you get like a little it replaces that window with an LCD screen. So I don't know. I'm real jazzed about this. I'm excited to see that they have succeeded in, you know, hitting so much of their goal right now, because that means they're going to be released and playable on modern computers, like with something like Myst 3 and Myst 4. And even Myst 5 is like really hard to run now. It's very hard to get a hold of these. So big thumbs up for, you know, this company successfully keeping their games alive.
As a side note, you can play these on Windows 10, but you won't be able to play them for Apple. They did not have that support.
Right. They said for some of these, it would be like building them back up from the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would suck. I think, man, at least Myst 5 had a Mac version, but it was PowerPC. Like, that was one of the first games that I was like, oh my gosh, I've got a Mac that can run this. And then it turned out, no, actually, you have one of the first Intel Macs, so you cannot run Myst 5 End of Ages. Womp.
Womp, womp.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that the $1,000 tier had sold out. How many of those were they offering?
There's 25.
Yeah, there were 25 because there were 25 pieces of art, and each individual person who did the $1,000 tier gets one piece of art.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and if I did mortgage my future to get that, I would probably end up getting, like, you know, like when Bart bought the animation cell from Itchy and Scratchy and just got Scratchy's arm. Like,
yeah.
But Riven is a beautiful game, and I imagine there that is a deep well. Shit, I love Myst, guys. So I'm looking at the 99 one right now because that book seems kind of cool, but I have to. Honestly, I'd have to be a little bit drunk to pull the trigger on that, so we're gonna wait till the weekend.
There you go. You should do like a side thing when you're streaming. Just do a donation goal to get it.
Yeah, there you go.
I would feel very bad asking people for money for that.
So that you can get the thing that you fanboy over. Yeah. Yes. Like,
would drunk Cole feel bad about that, though?
No, drunk Cole.
Well, see,
you just have to do an unboxing video, and then it's all worth it.
Oh, there you go.
Turn it into content. Write it off on your taxes. Continue, Joe.
Just wait until the weekend of Milwaukee, and then and then go look at it again. Revisit it then.
I'll just publicly do it at the bar. Guys, look at me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everybody would just throw money at you and be like, just get it, Cole. No. Just shut up about it already.
You've only talked about it for one episode, but I'm already tired of this. But the launch date for the Kickstarter as for the delivery of goods is November, so it might come around my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you can justify it as a birthday gift.
For myself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A birthday gift for myself that I have to pay for now.
Yeah.
Gross.
But then it'd be just like amazing when you get it and you'd be like, "Wee, this thing that I paid for a long time ago."
Yeah. So that's my story. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I have a friend who says that drinking is borrowing happiness from the future. So it's like you have to pay it back by buying yourself a game in the future.
There you go.
Yeah, that is actually a very good way to explain the concept of getting drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. Who do I want to jump to next? Jala. What is the deal with stocks? Explain stocks to me.
Well, this is just like, you know, my usual bent of random articles that don't necessarily directly relate to game releases very often. So, like, not so surprisingly, investment sites are now recommending that everybody hold stock in some kind of a gaming company. Mm-hmm. This is of some pertinence because the article that I read was discussing gaming industry growth and so on. 8.2% growth per year through 2020, at least, per market research that was done by Newzoo, who increased the gaming revenue estimate to $143 billion The increase was made basically because of the newest avenues of revenue generation, not just the games themselves, but also esports and game streaming, because that's being such a big deal. And things like the other stuff that I was talking about before with Amazon's API about, you know, monetization of, you know, multiplayer and, you know, streaming and all that different stuff. You know, all of this is, you know, same thing.
Yeah.
So I just Googled real quick for reference. The film industry is $38 billion. So yes. Gaming is blowing it out of the water, which I think it has been for a while. But that is quite the difference.
Yeah.
Well, and it's showing such strong growth and definite growth. And it basically the article is kind of summing up reasons why you should consider investing in gaming. Basically, the advancements in graphics processing tech, growth in the mobile platform field, which is steady. There are people playing games mobile, you know, on mobile. As much as or more than they play on consoles and PC, because everybody's got a mobile device, you know, they've always got it with them. So it's easy to pick up a game and set it down whenever. I mean, I know I do mobile gaming sometimes because of that same thing.
Yeah.
VR and AR, reinvention of gaming basically as a service rather than a product, because that is what everything is these days. It's all a service, not a product. It's all online. It's all digital. Activision, Blizzard, EA, and Take-Two all generate about half of their annual revenue from digital content, to the point that Activision and EA have high margins that are akin to what you usually see in a software tech company that has a low capital requirement like Microsoft. So that's how their growth and their margins are looking, because of all this digital content that they're using. And Activision's operating margin has been in the mid-30% range, with EA just behind that, and Take-Two on the rise trying to figure everything out. So anyway, everything's about in-game spending, focusing on esports, consumer products, cinematic experiences. That is why it's taken over cinema. I mean, like, you know, movies aren't as big a deal because games are becoming pervasive, and they've been pervasive for a while, but it's just growing as an industry overall. And especially now that esports have been doubled down on, and there are so many main companies, large companies backing esports as a thing and streaming as a thing and making it easier and easier for people to get into that. And then especially with stuff like Overwatch League, that was probably the biggest one in recent history. And, you know, I've talked about all of these things before. But, you know, this is just like on the stock side, the investment side. You know, if anybody, any of our listeners invest in anything, if you don't already invest in games, it might be a thing to consider doing. So this, it's just growing.
This article is very funny, because it's written for somebody who's not, you know, doesn't read this stuff like we do. You might remember Nintendo's mobile game Pokemon Go making headlines in 2016 for its use of augmented reality. The funnier thing, though, is at the very end, you know, because everything is content marketing, they've got just 10 stocks we like better than Electronic Arts. Oh, yeah. Even a non-industry site just wants to take a shit on Electronic Arts.
That's for sure. Well, and then too, like, to be practical too, like, the EA stock is going to be really high priced. Whenever you buy, you want to buy when it's low, you know, so you're looking at up and coming. You're not looking at what's already big.
Right.
So not unless they take a dip because they did some shit, you know, so like that after they had their wonderful fun debacle with the loot crates and stuff, that would have been the time to, you know, jump in and get that. Stock.
Wait for it to crater. Pull a Grand Theft Auto and cause it to crater, then invest and then jack it back up.
Right, exactly.
I think what I describe is a crime. I think it's one of the only crimes you can be incarcerated for.
I think it's the only crime you can commit in Grand Theft Auto too.
it's just the one. Yeah, Grand Theft market cap. This is not terribly surprising. It's interesting to see trends like streaming bubble up to, again, a non-industry site, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, like, isn't that always like my fascination, or very often what I end up pulling and going, guys, this is interesting to me, is just like how gaming as an industry, as a phenomenon, ends up affecting all these different you know, other industries and, you know, just different people that have nothing to do with it, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have anything else to say about it. Most of what I would talk about is, I wonder how one buys a stock.
Yes.
is it like hitchhiking? Do you just walk out and, cause like, I know how to invest in a fund.
I think it starts with selling a pen. I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I start out with a paperclip, and then I end up with Electronic Arts. Yeah.
Don't you have? I guess you wouldn't have. Like, your work did not previously have you on like a 401k or anything like that.
No, they were just bringing that in when I was there. I was halfway joking there. Actually, I invest in an index fund kind of thing. I don't know that it's technically a 401k. It's not tax advantaged or anything. But there's no the service that I use doesn't give you the ability to pick and choose. And that's the nice thing about that kind of fund, right? It's just like they just pick something that's going to match the growth of the market, and then there you go.
Yeah.
There are all the games out there that are kind of like introductions to coding. There has to be one out there that's like introduction to investing.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody will write in and tell us all about it.
Yeah. I would genuinely be interested.
So. No.
Wall Street Kid for NES. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Thank you, Jala.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ben, we're moving from economics to politics. What is this surveillance game?
Yeah, hopefully this won't stir up too much of political opinions or anything like that. But the company that made Orwell, which is Osmotic Studios, they gifted free copies of the games to a organization in Canada called Canadian Journalists for Free Expression to give to Canadian politicians. With the goal of which is they currently have a bill under review for expanding, I believe it's one of the government agencies' like ability to search for information on citizens through like and kind of developing like the tools that they can use. And so they want to give free copies of the game Orwell to politicians so that they can kind of see like what effect it might have if they go to a dangerous place with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of like a, it's kind of like a publicity story or kind of like stir up, I don't know, like the politicians themselves have not played the games yet, or at least they said that most of the responses that they've gotten to it mm-hmm. have been either kind of like automated responses, or they got, I think, a single note that said that they weren't allowed to install the game on a government computer.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and they said they would report back later and say how many keys have actually been activated.
Mm-hmm.
From politicians, but they haven't reported that yet. But it was just highlighting the fact that you can have a game that can kind of tackle an issue like this and kind of be used for political change. So
yeah. I've only ever seen like headlines about Orwell, Ignorance is Strength. Do you know anything about how that game plays, like what its deal is?
Yeah, I haven't played that one. I've played the first Orwell. I haven't played the second one because I haven't finished the first one yet. I imagine it's probably pretty similar, though. You play the role as a government hacker. You're trying to figure out a crime. And so the way you go about it is you kind of have a thread, like, you know, a suspect. And so you kind of look at all the current information that they have. So you might look at their, you know, like fake kind of social media profile, or you might look at like news articles about them. And then like you kind of find people who are in their spheres, either like, you know, people they might be having an affair with, or like relatives or things like that, or people they've gone to class with or something like that, or work with. And then kind of from that, it's like a puzzle where you figure out either their motivations, or you figure out who the real person who kind of perpetrated a crime might be, something like that. But kind of like the underlying thing of the game is like at every turn, you're kind of like reading into somebody's personal information. Mm-hmm. And like there's like literally like little to no privacy in this, even but it's like but it's unintended, you know. It's all kind of these like secondhand pieces of information, I guess. At certain points it gets into like things that are like illegal in certain places, where it's like you're looking at like phone taps of like somebody's conversation. Although I guess yeah, that's like a whole ball of wax, but yeah, so it's a very like creepy game from that point of view of like when you stop and think about what you're doing, but yeah.
There was a very vanilla version of this in Watch Dogs, wasn't there? Where you could, like, when you were looking at people's information, it would give you, like, a piece of blackmail about each person.
There's also one where it's like you would hook up to a power box or something, and it would show you the CCTV of somebody's like apartment, and it would just give you a very like personal piece of information about like somebody's life, like somebody who's going through like a medical issue or something like that, yeah. Or two people getting divorced or something like that.
That's right. It might not have been blackmail. It was just a piece of very personal information.
Yeah. It was almost like a filter that was applied to the world if you had particular, if you were looking at your phone to try and activate stuff, like as you were trying to, move a drawbridge up and down. If there's a pedestrian walking by, it would have a little Fight Club pop over with, like, currently having an affair, right? Like, it was just a little piece of metadata for the citizens that were walking around.
Mm-hmm.
Really not that far off reality, unfortunately.
I mean, yeah, and I think that might be what Ben was trying to avoid, but like, I don't know, this is top of mind for me. I don't feel great about directing people to Facebook right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That is an interesting current topic. Are we going to switch over to Instagram? Is that the one that's okay now?
That's actually why the multiplayer was in Haiku, is the algorithms are actually unable to read Haiku.
Yes.
Nice.
Oh, man. Something about the cadence.
So I guess we just need like an open source social network or something that we can just leave alone after it's created.
I think like that's what Ella was supposed to be. I think that's what Mastodon is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
They're just not cool enough.
I mean, that stuff launches. Everybody says, finally, fuck you, Twitter. And then they start an account on a new service, and then they just open up an app that posts the same thing to both places anyway, because they don't want to lose their audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's no one wants to lose the e-penis length they've accrued so far.
Nope. It's like it's like what was that Katamari game? Yeah, gosh, I forget. Yeah. Blah.
Nobi Nobi Boy.
That's the game I was thinking of. It was by the Katamari creator. Yeah. Nobody wants to lose the length off of their Nobi Nobi Boy. sorry, it took me a minute. I'm not going to edit that out because people need to know what a dunce I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm curious. They weirdly enough, they have a way to track what person is opening up and installing the game about surveillance and tracking people. So
with the Steam keys, because I think that's how they're monitoring it, is if they can tell if somebody's activated it. But I think that, I mean, that works with like, if you send a gift to your friend, mm-hmm. like you get information on when they activate it or accept it.
I don't think it's actually hypocrisy. I just think it is a very funny detail that the part of this that I'm curious about is knowing how many people download and install it. And that is information that would be not included in a game like this. Yeah.
How far did they get through? Well, I do think it's valid though, because it's like I myself like didn't even make it through the first game. I wouldn't really expect a politician, somebody with like, like a family and a lot of responsibilities, to like also take time out of the day and play this game all the way through. So I don't know. I think it's good for drawing attention to the matter in terms of like publicity, but I don't know how effective it's going to actually be. So. Yeah.
They can just take the time they have reserved for secret affairs and Twitter battles with teens and apply it to this game.
You're thinking of America.
Oh, crap. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Canada's on the same trajectory, but about 10 years behind.
Yeah. So they're on the Cincinnati timetable.
Yep.
Yeah. Cincinnati.
Per Mark Twain. Yeah. No, this is interesting. Like weirdly, the other part of their ploy works. I kind of want to go try out this game. Because like the way you described it, like doing that stalking, like that sounds interesting to me.
Yeah,
as a mechanic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the first game's available for $10 on Steam right now.
Okay. So. Well. And rounding us out here, Dennis, what is Healer's Quest?
Yeah. So Healer's Quest is one of those games where it, you can just tell the concept came from joking around late at night, which was let's take the most reviled, unattractive class in an RPG, healer, and make an entire game around it. it's got that kind of veneer that you would expect. It's everything is tongue in cheek. You play as the healer, and your job is to manage your health, the health of the rest of the party, as they go through this quest. And there's lots of little kind of cheap shots at the healers. For example, they all need to sleep in an inn. There's 5 members in your party and only 4 beds. So of course the healer sleeps outside.
That is very funny.
So yeah, you're kind of the little, the dumpy outsider, the gopher for the group. Exciting to hear. Apparently there's some like real good gameplay chops to this. So, you know, really funny concept. I like taking an element of, an RPG that is underappreciated or just kind of something that everyone can relate to and blowing it out.
Yeah.
But it becomes this really interesting, not management sim, that's probably the wrong way to express it, but, you know, so one of your characters in your party, his super ability only works when he's at full health.
Mm-hmm.
The other, like the barbarian, you know, his stuff kicks in when he's low health, and you have to manage not just the actual battles, but then the mood of everyone in your party.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got almost like a Darkest Dungeon twist to it, only infinitely more lighthearted.
Nobody's going insane.
Exactly. Yeah. And you actually have a fair number of skills to learn. So there's 18 different healing spells in the game, and each one kind of has its strategic role and its place. And you can only take four into battle at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the strategy in the game comes from kind of having an idea of what's coming up next and tailoring your kit to what you're going to be facing. In addition, every single skill of those 18, or sorry, every single spell of those 18 has a full skill tree.
Hmm.
And so you can customize the way that those spells are upgraded and the different kind of effects they have when you cast them to really tailor the way that you play.
Yeah.
So it's just a really interesting concept. I'm always fascinated by support role characters. It's always very, I don't know, I gravitate towards them. And this seems like a great way to explore the biggest trope from RPGs, but specifically tabletop RPGs, which is the healer is just like the gopher role.
Yeah, keeping these assholes alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I kind of resent them, cat, like a little bit making a generalization about this. I think healers are fun to play. It's nice to feel needed.
Yeah.
No, I like when I played like EverQuest or WoW, like it was very, it was very fun to play a cleric, A, because they often had kind of like really, just more variety in what you would do. Mm-hmm. Everything felt a little bit more like a crisis, mm-hmm. just as you're trying to manage stuff. And also like people just like needed you, like you could find a party if you wanted.
Yeah. Well, that's the same way for like a League of Legends or an Overwatch, where I gravitate towards picking the support role just because I know I'm not going to have to fight anyone else for it.
Right.
Like there's always need for a bassist. There's always need for a healer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you can kind of play your choice within that role without having to argue anyone off of it and say like, oh, I typed in, what is it? ADC first or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
AD carry.
I don't know what you're talking about.
A League of Legends thing.
Okay.
I hope it's still a League of Legends thing. I haven't played that game in forever, but
I gotta say, I love this. I love this art style quite a bit.
It's almost like painted storybook.
It's like a pastel, not like like Easter colors, but the actual medium pastel, like chalks and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the art has just enough depth to look good. And they didn't waste time, putting a ton of detail on anything that wasn't going to be worth it.
Yeah. No, this looks neat. I like subversive RPG stuff.
Yeah. So it brought to mind 2 Ash, which I think we referenced 2 weeks ago when I was on.
Oh, yeah.
So this kind of, and I also love this kind of type of game that's cropping up. It's almost like the RPG takedown or whatever you want to call it. Genre.
Mm-hmm.
Because it tends to take the things that are fun about an RPG and compress it into a much more palatable playtime.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And that's increasingly something that I'm looking for. Yeah. So
it is necessary.
Get your RPG fix, see a really interesting take on it, and nothing's going to outstay its welcome.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question or provide you with a prompt and then you respond to it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I asked them to please describe their favorite video game in haiku form, with the nominal reason that we're trying to convince a very eccentric monk to try video games. That was the first thing that came to mind. So, but yeah, just a little bit of fun, nothing too difficult. Favorite video game, but you just have to do it in haiku form.
Yeah. And I'll get started here. What's that?
People dig these.
Yeah. I'll get us started here with Devin, who says, "You are the shepherd. Fight reapers. Decide all fates. Plus tons of space sex." I am policing your syllable counts. So you're good, Devin. Just barely. Yeah, let's see. Ben, what does Jaden say?
All right. Jaden says, "Soar through the night sky, the heavens' endless wonder, vast and eternal." And then in parentheses, because I needed this one, "Elite Dangerous" is what he's describing.
Yeah, that could actually apply to a bunch to a bunch of games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jala, what's Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, "Roses are red. Video games are super fun. Haikus are hard." Not sure if this is haiku. This is a haiku. Sorry. It has been 15 years since I had to write one. Shrug. Yeah.
I think haikus are hard is a fun way to end a bad haiku.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a non-haiku.
Yep.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael says, "Blades reflect the void. Arsenal of lost children. Tenno, awaken."
Gee, I wonder what he's talking about.
I was gonna do it more charitably. Is that Warframe?
Of course, it's Warframe.
Okay, all right. I don't know how much he wants to be pigeonholed. You know,
he is pigeonholed by his own will.
The first time I read this, I read it as Techno Awaken.
Ooh,
oh, that's awesome.
there's a Tenno for that.
What is a Tenno?
It's like the actual like Warframes that you play as. One of them is literally like you design beats as part of their kit. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Huh. Let's see. Rob writes, "Green tunic and sword. Fight Ganon to save Hyrule. His name's not Zelda."
That's very good. I like
that. This is my favorite one so far. I haven't read all of them yet, but that is fantastic.
Oh. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, "No longer solid. Raiden does naked cartwheels and wins all our hearts."
He didn't win our hearts until 12 years later with Revengeance.
Yeah, true.
At least my heart. My heart. He won my heart with Revengeance. Jala, what does Noah say?
Noah says, "Androids revere men. Machines worship them as gods, but the gods have left."
Is that Nier Automata? There we go. Yes.
I like how
Noah put that in as a reply, so it wasn't
right up in there,
so it wasn't right there, so I could guess.
Yeah,
I feel smart. Dennis, what does Juan say?
Juan says, "Muster tears to fight, many poos in the basement, use Bible for flight." It's good.
What is he talking about?
I have no idea. So weird. Are our listeners speak in riddles because we asked them to?
Yeah. Why are you doing the thing we said you should do?
Danny says, "You fly through the air. Use science to travel far. GLaDOS calls you fat."
Yep.
Speaking specifically of Portal 2. That's such a mean joke. Like, that would actually be hurtful if it was said to a real person, but that is some very funny dialogue in Portal 2.
Yeah.
Well, then it's like, you know, she just kind of obsesses about it. Like, you know, Chell doesn't have a reaction, but she just keeps saying it and saying it and saying it, you know? It's like, okay.
Oh, man. Ben, what does Warren say?
Warren says, "Twin swords on my back, slaying fiends, leshens, and hags, all to find Ciri."
Yeah. And that pairs very well with Jala. What does Alex say?
Alex says, "World beset by death, with tongue and sword of silver, the white wolf wanders."
Nice.
I'm going to guess Witcher 3.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Hey, cool.
Yeah. Witcher 3 is a very good video game. Gwent, No, I just want to make Ben's eyes twitch.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Do the thing. Good job.
Dennis, what does Mike say?
Mike says, "Find and kill Jackal. Keep your weapons clean as well. Malaria sucks."
Far Cry 2.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Franz says, "No mere werewolves. Let us join the hunt tonight. All are granted eyes." Bloodborne.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ben, what does Sam say?
Sam says, packed with a dragon. Love that crushes like a mace. Oops, it's all worse now.
What is this?
What is this? I'm going to guess maybe Dragon Age? No? Maybe
Dragon Age 2, but I don't... I feel like I would have heard Sam talk about Dragon Age 2.
I just assumed
I know he
like
played Dragon's Dogma. Is that anything to do with that?
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry.
Maybe
Sam.
Maybe it's the original Dragon Quest.
Oh, maybe.
I'm grasping at straws.
If you choose the bad ending. but then you start Dragon Quest Builders.
Which is made of dirt. I learned that last episode.
Jala, what does Raghavan say?
Raghavan says, play Nier Automata. I can't haiku. But David made up one.
Ooh.
A robot waifu, fighting and philosophy, Nier Automata. I don't know if that's actually the right amount of syllables, but he at least attempted.
That counts. Yeah.
Woo-hoo! Sorry. Good job.
Sorry about
Good
the
job,
pause.
David.
Normally I take us forward from that.
Everybody had to count.
Yeah. I feel so at least, so I was doing that with my fingers counting it with like a fourth grader. At least I wasn't doing like a third grader and holding my hand under my chin to count the movements up and down to get the syllables, like understanding what a syllable is. That was you, Jala.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, what does John say if that is his real name?
Yes. John, if that is his real name, says psychological themes reform. Oh, wow. Themes. I want to take that again. Psychological thieves reform society. Also, teen dating.
Persona 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun game. let's see. Steven says a treasure, a treat. An unexpected embrace? The tables have turned. referring specifically to in Dark Souls when you meet your first mimic. Very good.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Nice. Focusing in on the best moments.
Ben, what does Nick say?
Nick says, you're wrong, Anthem. I now know without a doubt. Kingdom Hearts is light.
What?
I don't know, but I assume it's Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
It's Kingdom Hearts.
I don't know who Anthem is.
Anthem is a bad guy.
Oh,
I think.
Okay.
Believe I confuse all the names after a while. I'll look it up.
Is it an anime person who stands next to Goofy at one point?
Probably.
Okay.
Ansem, Seeker of Darkness. Ansem, Seeker of Darkness. So,
okay.
They heartless, born of Terra, and unpronounceable names, and. Anyway, he is an antagonist. That is his role. He is a heartless. He lives in the Hollow Bastion or the End of the World, which are bad places. So,
and
yes, he is a bad man.
Are heartless Dementors or Ringwraiths?
I would call them a Ringwraith, but I am probably going to make someone mad by saying so.
No matter how you answer that question, someone is going
it's
to
It's true.
I have created the perfect trap.
Bear in mind, I only played the first Kingdom Hearts, and I've only heard tidbits of the rest, which anybody, even those who love Kingdom Hearts, should understand sounds like a lot of nonsense unless you have a point of reference.
Yeah.
So I try. I just do not have all the pieces and reference points.
Yeah. Let's see. That was you, Ben, who did that?
Yes.
Okay. Jala, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, quiet wake from Walker Walks. Through the downward spiral to repeat insanity to be the 33.
Not technically a haiku, but definitely talking about Spec Ops the Line.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, the 33. I wouldn't have remembered that if I didn't just finish playing Spec Ops the Line.
I wonder, he might have gone by number of words instead of number of syllables.
Maybe.
Could have. Yeah, it looks like that is the case.
Okay.
Number of, well, except for the 2B, the 33 is only 4 at the end.
If you write 33,
you spell
though.
It out, maybe.
Yeah,
I guess.
What is 33 in Spec Ops?
That is the unit that the crazy guy leads that you're
got
going after.
It.
It's the damned.
Yes.
It's still one because it's got a hyphen.
Hmm.
Damn your hyphens.
Anyway, we can continue.
Yeah. let's see. Dennis, what does Steven say?
Holes in ground. Small yellow nest leader. Watch out, lawnmower.
Referring to Sim Ant?
Oh, that could be it.
Maybe. I forget if there's a lawnmower in Sim Ant.
I was actually about to guess Plants versus Zombies.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
I think yours might be a little more accurate.
Yeah. I don't know what the nest leader would refer to.
Yeah.
Huh.
Spent some good hours on Sim Ant as a kid.
Yeah. We were just talking about that on the Duck Tracks.
Oh, I didn't get to say it. To the hand under chin for syllable thing. I used to psych myself out so bad on that as a kid. Yeah. Be like, you know, bread. Okay, it's three syllables, right?
Yeah, calibrating the sensitivity is hard. You end up getting a lot of false positives. Yeah.
I don't even have a point of reference for that because I never did that in my life. So yeah. You were talking about it, and I'm just like, question mark? What?
Yeah, it was like trying to teach you about syllables, you know, in school or whatever. They're like, you know, they don't have a way to say like, oh, it's just like a single unit of sound. They're like, well, every time your chin moves up and down, that's a syllable.
Dubious.
Yeah, very. Marisan says, wake up in damp cave. Go and find pea shooter. Go and find a pea shooter. Die to evil door. Cave story, I think?
Yep.
Okay.
It must be because there's a damp cave involved.
Yes, and a pea shooter. Huh. And then round us out, Ben, what does Jack say?
Jack says, feeble cursed one. I always skip the herald's words. Bear seek lest.
Dark Souls 2.
You mean bear seek lest?
Dark Souls 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he mentioned that one in Slack too, and I think that is particularly good. Again, zeroing in on like that the really good moment from the game, or at least a moment that everyone can relate to. I'll say.
Yeah, let's do ours.
Okay.
James has a nail board. My wife should be dead, I thought. Cherry blossoms fall.
Is that Silent Hill 2?
Yeah.
cherry blossoms have nothing to do with haiku, but that is a good last line for anybody who doesn't like writing haikus. Just that way you only have to write two of the lines. Just cherry blossoms fall. Boom. Five syllables. You're good.
All
right. Ben, how about you?
All right. So I wrote two. So it's your pick. I have an older one and a newer one.
I like the older one.
Okay. A long time ago, in a place far, far away, I played a dank game.
I knew it was going to be Coder. I knew it was going to be Coder.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you can't say you have two and then not share the other one. I want to guess what it is.
Okay. All right. The new one is Ocean Crash Landing. We must go down to go up. We must go deeper.
No, Subnautica.
Yeah.
I could have sworn it was going to be Rocket League. Not to pigeonhole you.
Ben, you need to have one for Rocket League by the end of this conversation.
All right, I'll get on it.
Jala?
Discovering truth, deciding reality, forging your own path. This is Planescape Torment and Torment Tides of Numenera.
Very good.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Well, this, because we're trying to get a monk to play this game, I figured that this was, you know, on point for a monk.
Appeal to the existential.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I've got two, both for the same game.
Okay.
One pretty straightforward and one a little less so. So the first one is, aliens rule Earth. Advent controls everything. Good luck, Commander.
Okay.
I need to figure out how to play sound for you guys because I've got the sound clip for Good Luck Commander all ready to go and just nothing to do it with. So anyway, that's the first one. And then the second one is, well, that's what you get for taking odds as low as 99%.
I like that. I would have gotten XCOM off the back of that. That was good.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool.
Very nice.
Awesome.
Ben, we're waiting.
Well, I'm gonna give Ben until after I do the ad.
Okay.
just had a panic attack.
Yeah, thank you everybody for writing in, for responding. If you want to be a part of these, like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. A little bit of let's say programming note that I should have done at the beginning. There will be no episode next week because of travel on my part. So don't be champing at the bit for a new one. Well, champ at the bit, that's fine. Just, you know, maybe don't bother Jal asking when it's going to go up. Ben.
All right. Learning aerials. Troll them with calculated. Playing Rocket League. I got the first two before you asked me.
So. Yeah, playing a Rocket League. You know, throw an A in there. I know lots of hacks for Haiku.
No, playing Rocket League is good.
Playing Rocket
Cherry Blossom's League. Fall.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Cherry Blossom's Fall.
There.
The grind. Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, since you were away, I will throw to you first.
Yeah, so I was away for a week, but it was a week of travel. So I've just got my normal amount of stuff. And my normal amount of stuff is kind of casting around. I'm still playing Ni No Kuni. Yay. And it's still fantastic, yeah. It has gotten even more Pokemon sim-ish. In that, you know, I'm like evolving my familiars more frequently. But it's really interesting that the Wizard's Companion, or the book, the / game manual that I mentioned last time, continues to factor in prominently. And when you go to evolve your familiar into its final form, you get one of two choices. And so you can refer back to the book to actually read about what those two choices are. Otherwise, you just get the name and an image. So it allows you to be a little bit more strategic on, all right, this I see, you know, this version is very like fire attack focused, and this version seems very like poison focused, or this one's very damage focused, this one's very healing focused, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting route for the evolution to go, because what you find is generally, you know, the first two forms kind of have two elements to them. Like I said, healing and water damage, or fire and poison, or, you know, pick it. And then the final form focuses on one or the other, at least as far as I can tell, which is different than like, hey, final form is going to have everything in the kitchen sink thrown in. So an interesting little subversion there.
Mm-hmm.
The story of the game continues to just have a ton of creativity to it. Lots of really, really interesting ideas. But it's started to show that they'll introduce a new idea the second they use it. So it's almost starting to feel episodic.
Oh,
versus
weird.
Like a grander arc. So for example, the latest thing that I did, you know, I'd just gotten the MacGuffin pieces to mix with the MacGuffin wand. They're like, oh, it won't go together for whatever reason. You know, oh, it sucks too, because there's this Sky Kingdom that would have been able to fix it, but it got destroyed. They've never mentioned the Sky Kingdom before. And they're like, oh man, that really sucks. I guess we'll have to figure that out. And then as you're walking out of the building where they tell you about that, you meet a ghost who just happens to be from the Sky Kingdom, who gives you tips on what to do next.
Okay.
And it's like, okay, great. Like none of this was seeded before. None of this will be used after, as far as I can tell.
Right.
But I'm going to enjoy the story about these Sky Kingdom ghosts while I'm in it.
A little bit like that was that's similar to like a Mario RPG almost.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is fine. I the main thread is still there, and there's some intrigue to who the big bad is and who may be working with or against him.
Mm-hmm.
But the way things are going, I almost expect that to all be revealed right before the final battle, maybe. But like, you can't complain about really creative ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. The magic world versus real world has almost kind of slanted completely towards the magic world.
Right.
There was one quest where I dipped back into the real world, and true to fashion, it was to find a character that had just been introduced, had never been mentioned before, and then once I finished interacting with him, has not been mentioned since. So, you know, fine. But it's very much focused on the magic world, as it were. I unlocked fast travel. I unlocked, like, this is the weird thing. So I finally got it. It was 20 hours in, and then they gave me, like, three forms of it all at once.
20 hours in to get fast travel.
Yes.
Huh.
But I mean, they make up for it, man. They give you like a spell that lets you jump to certain points on the map. They let you. They give you a magical dragon that can fly anywhere.
Uh huh.
That you can call. And there's one other form of fast travel I'm forgetting. So it was just kind of funny because it was like all of a sudden I had an embarrassment of riches and I'm like, could I just have had one of these?
So here's my question. Like fast travel is absolutely necessary if, you know, it requires you that you bounce around a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, is this game structured in such a way that you have to bounce around, or is it like Final Fantasy X where basically the entire world is one big corridor? And so it doesn't really matter that you don't get your airship until the end, and then that just becomes a menu. Like, it never, so you can go mm-hmm. back and get your ultimates and stuff. Like, which one is it closer to?
This one is closer to the former.
Okay.
In that it is, the game does require you to bounce around, but it's pretty linear up to the point that it really gives you fast travel.
Okay.
So it's still an open world. You can still walk anywhere you want. Oh, it's a ship. They give you a ship that can sail across the seas. That's the third form. You can walk anywhere you want in the world, but really the story, if you're following the main quest and even like sticking closely to the side quests instead of just wandering around, you're going to go pretty linearly from point A to point B to C, whatever. When you get to point G, I was trying to pick a letter for further in the alphabet and I couldn't think of it for the life of me. Don't know why. S. Do you get to point S? They give you all the fast travel and they're like, okay, now there's three different places in the world you need to visit. We won't tell you which to go to first. Go.
Okay.
So the gloves do come off and fast travel doesn't arrive a second too late.
Good.
So yeah, that's good. Oh, the other thing is I talked about how the game was balanced in the first one, and I was like, hey, the balance feels pretty good. That quickly changed.
Hmm.
So I got quickly to a point where I went into a boss fight and just through serendipity, all of my familiars were like the perfect ones to fight, like in terms of elemental resistances and bonus damage and all that stuff. It was like, this is great. Like, this boss is weak to thunder damage, and I've got like all guys that deal thunder damage right now. I'm set, and they're fairly high level, and I got wiped. Just didn't even make it then. So at that point, I was like, all right, either I need to go grind for 2 hours or I'm going to put the game into easy mode.
Yeah.
What was the boss?
It was like the pig tank.
Okay. It wasn't like a clock or anything?
No, it was not a clock. It was a robot or a mechanical being, but not a clock.
Okay. I'm trying to think if it was the same boss I got stuck on, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Clock. I'll keep my eyes out for a clock now.
this is a like 5-year-old hazy memory of mine, so don't, it could very well just be a robot.
Fair enough. Yeah, but no, I set it to easy mode and that cleared it right up.
Okay.
And for the next couple of hours it was fine. I'm feeling like I'm starting to get to the point where it's just feeling like normal difficulty again.
And there's no way to ratchet down further.
There is no easier or easiest mode. Yeah, there is an easy or there is normal, and I'm on easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels balanced right now, which is what I said the last time I talked about this game, right before it got too hard for my palate. So
yeah,
we'll see where that goes.
Is there, like, inevitably there's going to be some grinding in your future to get caught up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there will be.
I think so. And fortunately, it goes pretty fast. Basically, the way grinding works for me right now is when you evolve a familiar, it goes back to level one, which means it's much weaker off the bat, but then it
has like a faster stat.
Exactly. Growth rate. Yeah. It gets stronger, faster.
It's like, it's almost like prestiging, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so when you get your evolved one back to level 20 or wherever it was before, it's going to be way, way stronger. So when I'm going to grind, what I'm doing is I'm evolving a couple creatures or familiars. So they go back to level one, go to an area to grind, and they gain levels super fast. And then I'm competitive again relatively quickly. Yeah. So it almost feels like there's a mechanic in there that as long as you go to grind right after you evolve a couple familiars, you're going to see a lot of reward for that, and it really feels like you're making progress versus being at the point where everyone is level 70 and levels only ding once every, 3 hours of play. It's quick. You're getting a level per fight, if not more. And so it's felt pretty palatable, the grinding that I've done so far.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how far I am through this game. I would guess probably about 3/4 of the way. And I'm really hoping that it hangs in there to the end because there's a lot to like here.
Nice.
There's a lot of mechanics that I'm straight up ignoring. So some of the side quest stuff, so some of the alchemy stuff. And I understand it's that way on the new game as well, Ni No Kuni 2, where you kind of, there's a lot of depth to systems that you want to pay attention to. And if you want to ignore any given system, that's fine too.
Yeah.
So I'm taking advantage of that. Because I bought PlayStation Now through April, and my goal is to have it done by April. And yeah, I think that'll lead into the next stuff I've been playing.
Woo!
Nice. Name-checking PlayStation Now there.
Are you I have one more question about Ni No Kuni.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Like maybe two. Are you still playing this with your kids?
I am. I'm not only playing it with them. But it's really fun to just know they can be in the room and they like it, so I have them in the room frequently.
Nice. And is it your intention to go into Ni No Kuni 2 after this?
It is. Well, it was. Depends on how grindy it gets.
Right.
I know I will play Ni No Kuni 2. That I can tell you right now. I can promise you. I am sure of that. I don't know if I'll burn myself out on the genre or the specific game before I'm done. So I might need some time to reset, but, all signs point to playing, you know, Ni No Kuni 2 at some point in the near future.
Cool. Nice.
You sound like me playing a JRPG and I gotta set that shit down for a while and come back.
Well, you know, we'll see how much I hate the game and myself by the end of this.
That's right. I'll come in next week just eyeing all the tables in the room. We'll see where it goes from there. So that's Ni No Kuni Wrath of the White Witch for anyone who wants to make sure they got the name.
What else you been sipping up on the PlayStation Now?
So I dipped into Motorstorm Apocalypse and Wet on PlayStation Now.
Okay.
And in both cases, I had mentioned I didn't really have any problems with latency with Ni No Kuni or with Alien Isolation, but neither of those were super duper Twitch dependent games.
So you have a racing game and a shooting game.
Yeah, now I've got a racing game and a third person shooter, and it's there just enough to notice, just enough to knock me out of truly enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not impacting things significantly, every time I mess up a drift or every time I miss a headshot, I'm wondering if it was because of latency.
Puts just enough uncertainty in there.
Yeah. And so even though it might not be anywhere because of that chance, it could be, it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So I had trouble really getting into either of those games, and played just enough to be okay, I probably do need to be filtering for games that aren't going to be timing dependent.
Yes.
Cause there, it feels just a little bit like I'm driving a boat in MotorStorm instead of driving a motorcycle. Yeah. And then I'll drift a little bit past where I want to be. And I can't quite tell, if it's because that's just the way MotorStorm Apocalypse drives and I don't like it, or because I would like the way it drives if I had the real deal, but there's latency. So
yeah,
it's odd.
Hmm.
Tried those two, and then I ducked into Fortnite because I think it's legally required.
Oh yeah, a guy came by and said that we were going to get our license revoked if we didn't do this by the end of the month. So I'm happy we're getting this early.
I did that. I did exactly what I do in PUBG, which is I spend about a half hour not seeing a single soul, collecting what I think is pretty good loot, and then handing it right over to someone that I never even saw before I was dead.
And then dying for what seems to be no reason by a person you had no chance of even seeing. Yeah,
exactly. Because you were riding on a rocket in the way.
Yeah. And so I literally played one game, died like that, and uninstalled the game. I was like, I know better than this.
Yeah, this is...
Which I think counts as my first ever rage uninstall. People joke about that. I've never actually been so mad at a game that I uninstalled it. I don't think my emotion was anger towards Fortnite. It was just you got me. I could have told you that was going to happen. Shame on me.
Yeah. That's just self-awareness, self-knowledge.
Yeah.
You know where this road leads. Yeah.
Yeah. I need the hard drive space for something else.
Right.
And I don't know what that something else is going to be. I feel like I'm a bit between games right now, even though I'm in the thick of Ni No Kuni. I'm kind of like casting around for what the next thing to really like bite into is. So yeah. I'm listening attentively to your this conversation and others to find what I should go to next.
Yeah. I don't know so that I have me. Anything for you.
Yeah, well, that's totally fine as well.
Yeah.
Any questions on those or?
What did you think of Wet? Minus the fail there the
oh yeah, but I love the style. Yeah. That was pretty nice. Just the pulp action film kind of deal.
Mm. That's the cool thing about it, like the kind of grindhouse aesthetic from like right in the heyday when that was like everything. Mm-hmm. When everything was that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And at least the parts that I played were not like, ooh, look at us, female protagonist, like it didn't feel gratuitous in a way I think it could have really easily been.
Right.
So, yeah.
Nice. That's my only question.
Appreciate it, yeah.
Yeah. Jala, I want to hear what you've been playing.
Sure. So, not a whole hell of a lot. I did some co-op. Finally, it's been a while since I had a co-op corner. I played a little bit of Portal 2 with Devin a little bit. I don't have a whole lot to say. We played through a couple of segments and he's already played this before. So it's just that he hasn't played it since it first came out. So yeah, we did a little bit of that. And you know, since we've both played it before, it's not much to say. We were just chilling out, hanging out. It was fun. Other than that, I played a little bit more Fire Emblem Awakening. I've gotten a tidbit further. I've come across some new chillins from the future and married off a couple of people. And then listener Timothy H. sent in some information about what I need to be thinking about insofar as the leveling scheme from here. So thank you to Timothy for giving me this information so that I can have at least a little bit better idea as I progress through the game. Again, I haven't played a whole heck of a lot of that, but I did play some. The only other thing I played, though, is I finished playing Framed 2. When I was talking about Gorogoa the other week, I realized, you know, like I still have Framed 2 on my phone and I never finished it. Like I got halfway through and I stopped. So I guess I just got like distracted or something. So I went back and I beat that game. And for people who don't know what Framed is, Framed is a spy story that's told wordlessly with film noir aesthetics and sound using panels that look like a motion comic, and you can manipulate and rearrange them in order to progress the story. And Framed 2, obviously, is a sequel. Playing this game was the reason why Mai recommended Gorogoa to me in the first place, which I talked about last week. Mm-hmm. I think it was last week. Time means nothing.
Time is meaningless.
It's sometime recently. Yeah. Anyway, this one is more involved than the original Framed. And if you guys were around when I talked about the original Framed sometime last year, my main gripe with the first one was that it was kind of easier and simpler and there weren't very many verbs. This one, you have two characters on the screen that you have to consider the actions of. And you have more verbs for use on the panels. There's turning and rearranging, but also rearranging more actively and reusing panels a lot more than you did in the first game. So of them are kind of tricky because you have to time switching panels sometimes in, you know, like a complex order in order to get through that particular scene.
Right.
So, you know, this one was a little bit harder of a puzzle game because of that. It didn't introduce any new verbs over the original game. However, it used the verbs that they already gave you, you know, in a more complex fashion.
In a more demanding way.
A more demanding way because you've got two characters and like one of them's a male and one of them's a female. So, you know, like the female is lighter weight than the male. And so certain things will happen with her because she's lighter weight than the other one. And she's smaller so she can fit different places, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And the ending, I will not talk about detailed or anything, but it is unexpected. And it basically sets it up for another entry. I liked the way that they ended this one. Mm-hmm. even more so than I liked the way that they ended the first one. So this one overall felt kind of like a good improvement, a solid entry, a solid improvement over the original game. So yeah, that was fun. I recommend people, if you listened to the episode about Gorogo and that sounded like coolness to you, this one may also be up your alley. It is similar vein. Framed, the original, is easier than Goragoa or Framed 2. So if you want to start with one of those puzzle games, I would recommend the original Framed game first and then go from there.
Does Framed 2 continue the story of Framed 1?
It's supposed to be like an independent story in the Framed universe or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like to me, it seemed kind of like the same dude. Like it looked like the same dude from the first one plus a girl.
Right.
But,
well, and talk about the aesthetics because it's pretty simple.
Yeah. So the aesthetic for this is definitely like film noir, like very clean cut, bright graphics, a lot of black and white. The characters are silhouettes with white accents. So
really a smooth animation, almost kind of like rotoscoped.
Yes. Yes, yep. Very good.
Does Frame 2 continue to let you fail gracefully? Because like that was one thing that I loved a lot about the first game.
You mean that you basically it just stops and then you have to redo that panel? Like it?
Yeah.
You just keep. Yeah, it's the same thing. Like cool. There isn't any interruption. The music doesn't stop. It doesn't reset anything. It just, you know, stops and you can stare at the panels and you can hit the play button when you want the guy to move again. And then, you know, you can start rearranging your panels and go from there.
Yeah. I mean, I say, failing gracefully, blah, 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 does it respect. In Framed 1, one of my favorite things was watching the many bad things that could happen.
Yeah.
To my guy.
It was like Limbo that way.
Yeah, a little bit, especially with the silhouettes.
Well, and then like when you get a large number of panels and you are going through, you end up seeing so many different variations and you're like, maybe this time he got it. No.
All right, you got me.
Yeah. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got Frame 2 on my iPad. I just moved it around. It was in a folder. That's kind of my problem with iPad stuff is stuff ends up in a folder. I forget that I have it.
Yeah, I have a folder with games, and so it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. I have a lot of things pinging on my phone very regularly because people message me consistently.
Yeah.
So, like, I've always got other things alerting and, you know, demanding attention. So it's hard for me to remember what I'm in the middle of.
Yeah.
But that is okay. But I did the thing, and... Sorry, I don't really have a whole lot to talk about this week, but that's because I was kind of like busy rucking forever.
Yeah, no, that's that is a valid excuse. Not that you need one. Like it's Frame 2 is a thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to continue the mobile game tip.
Yeah.
I have continued playing Plague Incorporated, Plague Inc.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I finished out all of the scenarios that come with the game. Mm-hmm. So, like, everything up through, like, the bioweapon kind of thing. And the way that they, you know, kind of alter this stuff, at least in the base kind of game, is different different strains have different abilities that you can activate to make it spread. Mm-hmm. They will also do different things on their own. So, like, the fungus, it won't actually, like, spread that quickly. Like, you need to save up DNA points to do like a spore blast and it will like affect a different random country or something like that. Bioweapon is pretty cool because it mutates and spreads very, very quickly. But that mutation means that it goes lethal. Like everything that it will mutate toward lethality. So if you don't keep that kind of pinned down, and spend money to de-evolve some of the stuff that it puts forward, I think de-evolution is on bioweapons. It all kinds of runs together a little bit. People will figure out what it is and then they'll kind of squash it. Right. So you need to like work harder to stay under the radar.
It's the weirdest stealth game ever.
Kinda, yeah. So I started doing some of the DLC scenarios, which are a little bit, and it's all pretty fantastical, but a little bit more fantastical. The two that I've done are the Necroa viruses and the brain parasites.
Ooh. So brain parasites just sounds fun.
Yeah, so it's
fun.
It's a little bit of the ones that are kind of available for you as DLC, it's the one that kind of changes the game the least. It's mostly like a flavor change almost. So the win conditions aren't so much to get everybody infected, but to figure out a way to spread quickly and induce the right kind of delusions to make them revere the parasite as a god. So like that was the way that I won the scenario that I had with it. And like you can affect behavior more overtly than with the other stuff. Like other symptoms are mostly like ways to continue to spread, but like you end up affecting behavior in such a way that you create social structures to protect the worm.
wait, is there a win condition where you just make like an objectively better society and everyone's okay that they're infected?
I mean that's kind of what happened. I wouldn't say it's like I mean basically humanity is enslaved as walking vehicles for this worm. But like yeah, I made them think that it was a better society. So I want to go back into it because it seemed like there was a little bit more variance, but compared to some of the other ones, it is a little bit more vanilla in that it's more, again, it changes the flavor and not so much the mechanics. The Necroa virus, basically it's like a zombie outbreak kind of thing. Normally I'm kind of like, blah, zombies, whatever. This actually kind of like complicates it in a really interesting way because the spread of the virus is only a part of the game. You're almost certainly going to be noticed and a cure is going to be developed. You know, but before you can infect and eradicate everybody, just by the symptoms themselves. But the ability to reanimate the dead is its own kind of like ability that you trigger. And what that does is it opens up a whole other set of abilities that improve the survivability of the zombies themselves. So it's like it adds another stage to the game. Normally, like a Plague Inc. round goes, okay, you start out slow, you evolve, infect, stand under the radar for as long as possible. And then, you know, once you've infected as many people as you can, or once the cure starts, you know, getting up there, you evolve as quickly as you can to kill as fast as you can. With this, it's kind of the same thing, except there's this whole post game, which is your goal isn't to infect everybody. Your goal is to wipe out humanity. So even if they have eradicated the live hosts of this, you can mutate in the zombies and that leads to you taking out the population that way. And they also add kind of these research centers that are trying to basically like put together military forces to combat the zombie hordes. Think like the Jolly, like the Umbrella CS, like the UBCS, right?
Yeah.
And certain abilities that you can get allow you to direct the horde.
So, oh, fun.
So in certain countries that have a certain amount of population of the dead, you can say like, okay, I'm going to spend DNA to direct the horde, so they will go and take out the military here. Basically try and like squash resistance as it pops up.
Cool.
Yeah. It's really neat. Like it changes a little bit of the music, a little bit of the graphics, but you're still like looking at the world map and, you know, making your decisions by evolution. But like, it is a very, it is a marked mechanical change. And like when you get into something, so that is really similar to the simian virus that happens. That they did in conjunction with the new Planet of the Apes movies. Like, you develop basically the disease from Planet of the Apes that makes the apes smarter and the humans die. The one that I tried, so they let you do trials of these, is the shadow virus, which basically is like a vampire thing. Like, you don't start out, you know, as just like the disease itself, and like there are like one or two carriers in a certain country. You actually play as a vampire. And you have to like direct his motion from country to country and like set up layers. And you're evolving like his shadow contagion that is turning people into like your Renfields, right?
Taking over all the blood banks.
Pretty much.
This is less specifically like Plague Inc. anymore. And it's like sim bad things happen.
Yes. Sim disaster.
Sim disaster.
Yeah. But it's real neat. I didn't drop the money. Like, each of these new scenarios or virus types is like $2. I don't know that I'm crazy about the simian one because it's so similar to the zombie one, but like the vampire scenario seems very difficult. Like, eventually, like, and if you stay in the same country for too long, you're going to be feeding that whole time and people will think there is some kind of blood cult. And you're watching like the news ticker go as like, oh, new blood cult activity reported here, blah, blah, blah. And if that happens for too much, they realize, oh, it's not a cult. It's a vampire. And then like basically the Templars start appearing in order to take you down.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So Plague Inc. is real neat. Like, if you can handle the darkness of the subject matter, it's a very neat little sim.
Very cool.
Any questions about Plague Inc.?
No.
When are you going to start playing Pandemic?
I don't know.
When do you want to come over, Cole?
I mean, that would be the thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk.
Well, yeah, I'll text you. We'll get a game night going.
Yeah. The other thing I've been playing, another mobile game, is it's called Freeways. This is by the guy who did Desert Golfing.
Oh God. Yeah, we talked about this on the show.
Yeah, we did. And I had that tab open forever because I never pulled the trigger to buy it. And then I was like, oh, it's $3 and I have a trip coming up. This is really, really neat. So what this is a game about drawing traffic interchanges. Okay. So what happens is you have like this big map that is divided into little screens with basically like little businesses that have, you know, that want to get from place to place, or like highways that are feeding in from one side of the screen or the other. And you have to figure out the best way to draw a connection between them that results in the most efficient flow of traffic and also uses the least concrete, like they just like the least amount of road to get people where they need to go. And so like what this kind of gets down to is like, you have to look and see like what the demand is for traffic from one place to another, and then decide, okay, is this going to be like two lanes of interstate with an overpass going over? Like, should this be a roundabout, like getting into some, you know, some complicated places with like water hazards or whatever. And then what's great is, you know, there is like a success condition. Like, you complete the network, you satisfy basically every connection that needs to happen, and then cars come onto the screen and you can press a button to basically like simulate and then gauge the efficiency. What that does is it speeds up the play and basically floods the area with all the traffic that's going to be going in there simulating it, and gives you a score based on a bunch of different criteria, you know, traffic flow and stuff like that. But the fail condition is if there's a jam. So then you have to like clear it all out and then start over again and, you know, try again. So it's kind of neat, like applying like, okay, I've seen like a highway exit that is kind of like this. Will that work? No. Okay. Well, shit. I actually just like naturally made this into kind of a clover leaf. So why don't I like clear this out and just make it a clover leaf? Oh, that works really well. And, you know, as you go on, you clear like these individual screens and you zoom out and you see like the whole world map of all these cars, you know, moving around. So it's all connected. And you have like an overall world efficiency score. So like you are rewarded for not just solving it, but figuring out, okay, this is where things are kind of hung up. Let me tear all this down and then restart it, draw everything over again and see if it actually goes, goes smoother, right?
So have you hit the point where you're like, okay, I solved one problem here, but that just caused another problem over here. And like, you've pulled that knot all the way around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh.
Not all the way around the world, but no. So it's mostly, every screen is kind of self-contained. I have not in my play so far noticed any like congestion in one screen affecting another. Right.
Hmm.
So we will see if that actually happens, but it's like, it's a very neat little like lo-fi optimization problem. When I say lo-fi, like if you look at the screens of this, it looks very like not MS Paint. Like I think that's maybe a little bit too harsh on it, but it's like black and white. And the, you know, the cars are like pastel color. The sound effects are kind of like really delightfully, kind of Atari like, you know.
This sounds like the perfect travel game, down to the point like that it's travel themed.
Yeah, it's about travel.
This is
Yeah.
It also sounds like it's not as stress-inducing as Mini Metro.
Yeah. Yeah, Mini Metro definitely has the feeling of slowly being suffocated.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, but this one is definitely more trial and error. Like, you can get frustrated, but there's always a new screen or a new area to go to, you know. And they're all, you know, a little bit challenging in their own ways. So, yeah, it's a neat little puzzle game.
This is only on mobile, or you can get this on PC?
So, this is, I know it has an iOS and Android version. I'm playing this on iPad. There is a PC version. I don't know if it's on Steam, but it is on itch.io. Okay. It's on itch.io, yeah. Yeah, so I recommend it. It's cool. It's like a $3 game.
Cool.
Nice. Any questions about Freeways?
No.
I think that covers it.
Okay, Ben, round us out.
Okay, yeah. I only got a couple. So I played two board games that I'll briefly talk about over the weekend. I played a game called Viticulture, which I had played before. It's like a winemaking board game. Where you try and build the best, like, vineyard, and, like, you fulfill orders of, like, you turn in grapes to wines, and you fulfill orders of wines to make money.
Is this like is this like Agricola?
It's kind of like that, yeah. Instead of, like, worrying about starvation, you're just worrying about selling so wine, I guess. I don't know. It was a neat little game. I guess I don't have too much to say about it. Okay, I think it's been out for maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, so it's not like a fresh game or anything, but it's still pretty good.
Nice. How has it brought to your attention?
This is a game that was owned by my friend who I visited over the weekend, and so it is one of his more favorite games.
Nice. What's that called again?
Viticulture.
Okay.
There's some expansions for this, and there's actually different like editions of the game. So I think I was playing like the third edition of the game, but I could just be confusing that with like Twilight Imperium. But yeah,
everything is Twilight Imperium now.
Oh no! I hope not. I want a game that does not take 6 or 7 hours. The other game that I played this week, another board game, was Scythe, which I can't remember if I've mentioned this on the podcast before or not.
You did. Steampunk robots.
Yeah, awesome game. Still had a lot of fun with that. Every time I play that, I'm still like pretty impressed with that game of like how deep the strategy is. It does a good job of not, even though there's combat in the game, there's like kind of like punishments for combat. So like, it's not really in your best interest to go ham and just try and attack everyone. Like you will lose the game if you try and do that. So I particularly like that design of the game. It's mostly about just trying to make the an efficient. I guess like gathering machine of different resources.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun. Played a couple games of that, and then actual video games that I've played is I've continued playing Divinity Original Sin 2. I think since the last time I talked about it, I've settled on a build that I like playing. One thing I tried is I tried playing as an undead character, which I think I mentioned this on the characters when I first talked about the game. There's like you can be humans or elves or dwarves or whatever, but you can also be undead human, undead elf, undead dwarf, like that sort of thing. So I landed on a class being a undead elf because the advantages is if you're undead, you can lockpick treasure chests with your fingers, with your bony skeleton fingers.
That is so good.
So you don't have to neat. Yeah, you don't have to worry about collecting like lockpicks and managing that at all. So that's fun.
You are your own skeleton key.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And as an elf, there's a mechanic in the game where you can eat body parts to learn. I think I mentioned that. You can like learn the history of people. So I still kept with the elf, so I have like both of those. And then I picked a conjurer class. So it's somebody who like makes a summon, and then that thing will fight other people as well, in addition to you fighting them. And so I'm doing a lone wolf. I'm picking one of the custom characters, like one of the five characters with like a backstory, who's also I made a conjurer and like also summons things, but he's a human, not an undead, like a living human
yet. He's not undead yet.
That's true. There could be a plot twist. And so I'm just fighting with the two of us, and then with the lone wolf perks, you kind of like level up twice as fast. And so I was able to rush if you get to like level 10 in summoning, instead of it being like a tiny little imp that's kind of like hitting their kneecaps, it's like this giant thing that like slams down above them and like drains them for 50 hit points, which is like a big deal.
Nice.
So I rushed that on both of them, and I'm like, combat's no longer a problem anymore. So that is kind of what I was looking for. So like, I'm not getting stuck like having to like reload over and over again and execute like a perfect series of moves for combat. So now like the game's kind of picking up pace for me.
Hmm.
I've gotten off of like the first main area, and I'm in the second area. One detail I like about the game is that it looks like it's just a continuous world. Like you don't. At least so far, like you just keep going in a direction. You don't like fast travel somewhere else and put in another main area. It's like continuous. And that was something that was pretty cool. I got to, there's a couple of gates that I'm at now, or things that I can't get past. Hopefully this isn't too much of a spoiler. There's mm-hmm. this one creature they have that's really cool, where it's a crucified sorcerer who can shoot lightning bolts at you.
What?
Yeah, and he does 66,666 damage to you, which kills you. And it just, like, it's called, like, a shrieker or something like that.
This encounter guest designed by John Romero of Doom fame.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just, like, a lot of lore. Like every corner you explore, there's something like that where it's like, oh, this is really cool that they went this direction with, like, kind of, like, the limited engine that they have of what they're making this thing with. So I'm still pretty into it. So I'm still churning through that. Still happy with it. I think I pretty much like mastered the first area. I was able to do like most of all the quests and like do that well. I don't know if I'll keep trying to 100% everything, but yeah, we'll see.
Nice.
Yeah. I think that's all I got. Any questions about Divinity Original Sin 2?
No, you're making a pretty good sell for it. Oh, good.
I will say one more thing. I did play a multiplayer version of the game with another friend. We started a co-op campaign. One thing with that is I don't want that to be the first time that I play the game, because the way it works is like anybody can trigger any of the dialogues, mm-hmm. but only the person who triggers it sees it. So like you can listen in on it if you're near them. But it's not a very good way of experiencing the story of the game.
Right.
Like if somebody else triggers a mission, you might not see it completely. And you have no idea how they responded or if they did the types of things that you want to like maximize or anything like that. So while it was fun playing, you know, and doing the combat and trying managing that with other people, like I think that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'll be good to do like as a second playthrough through the game instead of the first.
I played the first Divinity Original Sin that way, and I'm surprised they didn't try to at least fix that.
Yeah.
That was a major frustration with the first game.
That said, it's like pretty ambitious what they're doing, because you can separate your party, and they can be like on completely different parts of the map, and you're able to cut between them like instantly. And I didn't really know you could do that until I kind of like stress tested or whatever, but you can, yeah, it's...
Hmm.
That aspect's like pretty impressive that they can handle that in the game. So
yeah, I imagine it would be maybe not equally onerous or onerous for the same people, but like if you were playing with somebody and they happen to talk to somebody and your control is rested to show you that cutscene while you're trying to go do something else, I could see that also being frustrating.
Yeah, because like another aspect is like fighting is asymmetric too, so like one person could be in the middle of a fight and the other person could go on the other side of the map and just start a dialogue with someone, right? Yeah.
Like, which would that go into like turn-based mode at that point?
Yeah, right. I talk for 2 APs. Yeah, I don't know. So it's kind of like, I don't know, they kind of put themselves in a tough situation with how they made the game, but at the same time it's you know, they also try to achieve something that's pretty hard to do. So I think it'll work well. I'll play through it single player first, and then I think later I will go back and play co-op, and I think it'll still probably be enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A question, you mentioned kind of getting to the point with combat where it's not an issue, you're powerful enough that you can kind of just tromp through anything. Is that, do you have a sense if that's because of your specific build, or can like multiple builds get to that point fairly easily?
It doesn't feel like multiple builds can get there that easily. Like, because one of the things with the conjurers is every turn you can spawn a totem, which is just like a turret that fires damage at a person. And so every turn with Lone Wolf, you have like 6 action points per round for your character. And so 2 of them's that, and then 4 of them's just attacking. But like they last, I think, 3 rounds. But between the 3 of those things and the summon that you have, like they're fighting 5 people with 1 character. And so if you have Lone Wolf, everything's like doubled in terms of like how much damage it's doing. So I think like that's why that class can like kind of function the way it is. Like I tried playing as a rogue, I think my first time through. I don't know if I could push that to the end of the game because I don't think you have the same sort of leverage. Like you, and this is kind of like the same problem with D&D. Like your first attack as a rogue might be really good, yeah. But then you have to actually fight everyone, and then it's really hard, and then it's not fun. So
seems like that would be easiest to do as like a member of a bigger party. Like it doesn't seem like that plays well with Lone Wolf.
Yeah. Some stuff might be mitigated with that, but even then, like, I'm not sure why you wouldn't just do a party of 4 people that are all summoners and just have like 20 things on the field that they have to deal with.
Yeah, flood the chamber. Yeah.
But I think that's definitely kind of like how you kind of, that's like a winning strategy of the game, is just get as many like things on the board as possible, because since it's turn based, like, you know, if you are only one person, you're going against 4 people, that's 4 attacks against your 1, and that's really bad. But if you spawn a whole bunch of stuff, then you can kind of outnumber them.
Yeah. And even if they're doing 1,000 or whatever it is, 666,000, you know, 666 damage, they can only attack 1 thing at a time.
Yeah,
that thing you still can't get around. They'll just murder it. Like that is a hard game that they have set up. Yeah. I know. I tried throwing my summon in front of it, and it just like instantly kills it. I tried putting a totem next to it, instantly kills it. And it's like, all right,
yeah,
gonna have to walk around this guy.
I think I am supposed to leave.
Yeah. The one upside of crucifixions is there. It's one way facing, I guess.
Maybe.
So, I don't know. Yeah.
Wow.
You
know,
the Romans designed it to be as excruciating as possible and only have one facing.
Yeah. Real oversight on their part.
It's like, you know, the Death Star has the exhaust vent.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's why we're alive and they're not. Nice.
Yep.
Awesome. I don't know that I have any other questions about that.
Yep. Hopefully,
I'd be excited to hear more specifically about your co-op playthrough when you get to delve into that. Because I stalled out on mine from the original game, but I was equally as impressed by how ambitious the game was while still maintaining co-op, despite some flaws.
Yeah. If I get to a meaningful place in the co-op campaign, then I'll fill you guys in about it.
Cool. And is that all?
That's all I got.
Okay. Well, I think it's time to call it a night. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level, a podcast for people who love video games, number 236. Or wait, no, 238? I lost track of it. No!
That's exactly how old you need to be to stop counting.
Maybe. No, it's 238. I just named the file incorrectly. Level number 2.
Or is it the second anniversary of your 236th birthday?
Maybe. Are you calling me old?
No, I'm quoting a sign I saw on someone's lawn.
Okay. I don't know that I'm following you.
It was happy birthday to so-and-so. It's the whatever 29th anniversary of their 21st birthday.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Huh. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Sorry, I'm too dense to understand what Dennis is talking about. I get it now. Good.
People who don't like to age or talk about their age.
Yeah, weird.
It's just a statement on how comfortable you are with your age, Cole.
Yeah. So if you listen to the show, thank you so much. This is the 5th time I've thanked them. I need to stop that. I'm in a real barrel here. Please leave us a rating or review on iTunes. It was nice when those came through. I want to keep that going. Let's keep the train going.
Thank you to those who have written.
Yes.
Yay!
And also, if you are able to, consider going to patreon.com/duckbeattv. Kick a couple of bucks there if you can. And if you're going to be coming out to Milwaukee, that is this weekend. So if you see us at our table or if you're at the live show, please introduce yourself. Do not be afraid. Jella, you were at a live show with us. You know we're approachable, right?
Well, also there's the fact that I don't care about whether or not someone's approachable. I just approach them either way. So, I mean, like, but yes, they are very approachable humans, even if they are very large. I am just very small, so everybody seems very large to me.
Yeah.
You know what would be super meta just don't, if you just, listen. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just don't get up from the table. Just sit and it will be fine.
Me? Oh, yes. Yeah. So
either
I will,
one
so,
of
so,
you. You are yeah, both so, very tall boys.
Yes, so we will not loom over the over our visitors. Yes. Yeah. What were you going to say, Dennis?
It would be very, very meta if you were to listen to this segment on approaching Cole right before you approach Cole.
Oh, yes.
I would get a lot of joy out of that.
Yeah. I've been saying this in a bunch of places. If I know you primarily by a screen name, by all means, introduce yourself by your real name, but also let me know how I might know you on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that tends to help out. We'd love to see all of you folks who can come out. Otherwise, we will be here not next week, but we will be returning on the week of, oh man, yeah, April 27th. No show on the 20th. Yes, show on the 27th.
And I'll
it
soft
is awfully
bring up
suspicious
no...
that we're taking off on April 20th.
Oh, yeah.
I will no commitment, but I will have that night free because we're not doing the show. So maybe we can get some kind of streaming deal together or something like that.
That'll be fun.
Hang out online, those of us who are available.
I would like to watch that in bed, recovering from being on the road for a very long time. Cool. Well, I think that's everything. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeed TV.
Yeah, I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at twitch.tv/greenlaser73.
I'm Jolichon in places, including and not limited to Twitch.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelby on Twitch.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. All right. I only have one, and lest people think I'm just suggesting a thing that I said, what made me write it down was when Ben said it. Cherry Blossoms Fall.
Mm-hmm.
I had that too. Yes.
Okay. So that's the one that I have. Dennis, what else do you have?
Yes. My vote is with Cherry Blossoms Fall as well. I was pretty happy with that. So I also had Grand Theft Market Cap.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Which I feel like we've had a Grand Theft something title before. I need to go back and look. But
I didn't realize until I went to put in the title for the last one that we already had to consider the title. Yeah. Consider the haunch.
There it is.
Yeah.
So Grand Theft Market Cap, the double Mark Twain. There's a tenno for that.
Okay.
And then Cherry Blossoms Fall.
I also had Sim Disaster.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
That's the only new one I had.
Okay. Ben?
I also had Cherry Blossoms Fall. I also had Grand Theft Market Cap, and I also had Rage Uninstall.
Well, I think it's kind of like obvious which one we're going with.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Cherry Blossoms Fall all the way.
Let's do Cherry Blossoms Fall. Cool. Well, I'm going to go to bed. I have to get my sleep schedule on a normal rhythm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Yeah.
Good
thank
luck,
you, everybody. Thank you.
Bye.
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 Talk to you guys later. Have a good week.
You too. Bye.
Have a good week.